With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Hi, Mike Greenberg from ESPN. If you are a YouTube TV customer, you could lose access to NFL and NBA games on ESPN and ABC. Don't miss out. Visit KeepMyNetworks.com to learn more.
If you're a YouTube TV subscriber, you may not have access to the games you want to watch.
Visit KeepMyNetworks.com for more information.
If you're a YouTube TV customer, you may lose access to NFL and NBA games on ESPN and ABC. Visit KeepMyNetworks.com for more information.
Hi there from the ABC 11 Forecast Center. I'm Big Weather. Now, I know you have come to rely on us for news and weather. But if you're a YouTube TV customer, you may have heard ABC's no longer available.
Hi there, I'm meteorologist Larry Maurer.
If you subscribe to YouTube TV, you can't watch my forecast right now.
Just go to
You have choices, so I want you to go to keepmynetworks.com to find out more information. And as always, I hope you do watch us here on ABC 7 and get my very latest forecast.
Well, if you've been following what's been going on with Disney and YouTube TV, you've probably heard that message from multiple ESPN personalities in recent days. As the impasse continues, we welcome you back to the Sports Media Watch podcast. I'm John Lewis, joined as always by co-host Armand Brody and producer Derek Futterman. And today, well, what's the big top story in the industry? It's the continued blackout of Disney networks, including ESPN and all ABC stations on YouTube TV. And no better place to start than that. The reality is that YouTube TV is obviously one of the top distributors out there. A lot of people use it. It's the leading distributor among the streamers. And so ESPN not being available there is causing a lot of agitation. I'm going to put my cards out on the table. I don't have YouTube TV right now. In fact, I do have the ESPN Unlimited app, so I'm not missing anything at all. And if I didn't have ESPN Unlimited, what I was doing before I got the app was just getting a day or a week of Sling with its short-term day passes and week passes. So really, I'm just going to be honest here. I personally don't see the urgency that other people see. Beyond the fact that you can get ESPN for $30 a month, which if you factor in the YouTube $20 discount, basically means you're spending 10 extra bucks. Now, 10 extra bucks, it's not nothing, but it's also not crazy. Beyond that fact, $5 for one day of ESPN, don't have to miss the college football Saturday if you don't want to, seems doable to me. But look, at the same time, if you're already paying for YouTube TV, you're probably pretty annoyed to have to pay for something else. Armand, I think you had said you have YouTube TV. Obviously, my perspective is a little bit different because there's no issue for me. But for you, how has it been being blacked out from ESPN programming?
So I do have YouTube TV, and I'll be honest with you, John. I'm ticked off at this whole situation, but I also need to add some context to that. So I have no desire to watch any of ESPN's daytime programming other than for the purposes of either this podcast or for an on-the-air column. But I'm not a fan really of any of ESPN's daytime programming, so I have no need to watch any of their daytime shows. But they've got college football. They run college football in many aspects. They've got the college football playoff. They've got football, the NFL. And they've got Monday Night Football, of course. And those games are simulcast oftentimes on ESPN and ABC. That's what I care about. And not only do I care about it, but a lot of the fans who have YouTube TV have it for that reason, because it provides the option to have as many different channels and networks in one place, that skinny bundle idea that we talk about all the time. It gives fans so much of the sports that you want to watch from TNT, from CBS, to ABC, to NBC, and they're all in one place. Now, I'll be honest with you. I'm a Cowboys fan. I thought that this might have been settled before a Cowboys Monday Night Football game. Didn't happen. Now, this week, we've got Philadelphia and Green Bay as we are taping here. One of the games of the year in the NFL. Still no ESPN on YouTube TV. The other side of that is I'm getting used to it. And that's the part I think people need to be concerned about. Because at some point, you just say, you know what? To heck with it. I've gone this long without it. It's become a part of my routine. I just either live without it, or I find another way. I go watch it at a bar, or I go to a friend's house, or I do whatever I have to do without having to spend that extra money. I am one of those sports fans. I don't want to work super hard for my stuff. I want it to be where it's supposed to be. That's why YouTube TV was such a convenience for me. But not having ESPN be a part of my life, it's not the worst thing in the world. And I think that ESPN needs to be concerned about that, because not everybody is going to run to their app because it's one more thing that they have to pay for.
How essential is ESPN? So let's start with the simple fact. October is a very different month for ESPN than November is, because in October, you have baseball playoff games that are exclusive to ESPN. If you are a WNBA fan, and you know, and whenever you make that suggestion to someone online, it's like, no one cares about the WNBA. Well, I happen to be one of those people who didn't want to miss the WNBA finals. They have the WNBA finals. They have the start of the NBA season. They have the start of the NHL season. And realistically, those first week games are more important to a neutral fan than in November. So there's a lot of events, NHL opening night, NBA opening week, WNBA finals, baseball playoffs, on top of NFL and college football, that make October a month where ESPN is really essential. I was actually going to drop my ESPN Unlimited for November. I went through the process of dropping it because I don't really need the November games. And important point, I spent several hundred dollars on an antenna that allows me to watch ABC, which has pretty much all the best ESPN games. So I don't really need ESPN Unlimited. The reason I kept it was because they said, we'll drop your price by $5. And I looked at it and I thought to myself, it would end up being $35 total for ESPN Unlimited and NFL Plus, which I have for Red Zone. And if I were to get NFL Plus by itself and say ESPN Plus, because I like a lot of non-revenue sports, that would be combined about, let's see, $28. So I'm basically spending $7 extra so that if there's a random ESPN exclusive college football game, I can see it. Just made sense financially. But it wasn't because I felt like, man, I got to have ESPN. And I feel like what you've said, Armand, is a great point. There's a lot of inessential programming in ESPN. You know, they pay Stephen A. Smith a king's ransom. But no one really, one, you don't need to have ESPN to see the crazy things that Stephen A. Smith says. They put it all on social media all the time. So you don't have to have ESPN if you're even into that stuff. And realistically, no one has to watch every game. And if you're a sports fan, one of the things that we forget, if you're really a sports fan, anything will do, right? You know, I watched Georgia Southern women against Florida State yesterday. And Florida State, which is playing UConn next, really had to work hard to beat Georgia Southern. So take a wild guess as to how that UConn game is going to go. But I mean, anything will do if you like sports. One of the things that college basketball reminds you is that just having two teams competing as background noise has value. So the idea that, oh, I got to watch this particular ESPN game. If there's a game on another network in that same window, go watch that. All right. And I think one of the things, you know, we're taping this right after we just recorded with Adam Lefko of TNT. And as networks like TNT put more investment into really low tier events, like they did TCU versus St. Francis of Pennsylvania, they put in like real effort into that broadcast. I mean, as the industry changes so that even relatively low-tier sports are getting high-level production, you don't really need, you know, Cal versus Miami on ESPN.
I watched Queens versus Winthrop on YouTube the other day because it was there. Sometimes I just want to know that my sport or a sport is there. I'll give you another example. It's not the same thing, but just to sort of highlight what I'm saying. I had YouTube TV when MLB Network and YouTube TV went into their dispute. That was, what, 2 years ago. MLB Network is not on YouTube TV still. And fans have just gotten used to the fact that it's not there. And I do think at some point, depending on the fans, depending on just how you want your sports to just sort of be where you think they're supposed to be, I do think fans get to a point where they say, you know what, I don't really want to work that hard. So whatever's there, I'll watch. And if it isn't there, then it's not worth my time. I think that's a real thing.
You said you watched that Queens Winthrop game. I was watching it too. We'll never know what the audience was, but I mean, 8:30 a.m., it's much better than sitting down and watching the news, right?
Yeah, or get up.
Yeah, well, you know, Mike Greenberg did guest on this podcast, so...
I think the fact that the Dallas Cowboys playing on a primetime Monday night game did not end this blackout shows you that both sides are really dug in. Disney sent a note on Friday afternoon to its employees, and it divulged that it offered YouTube a deal that would cost less than the expired license that it was going to be offering, as they say, quote, innovative, bespoke programming packages tailored to sports fans, entertainment fans, kids, and families that would provide tremendous flexibility for YouTube TV and greater choice and value for its consumers, end quote. But the problem here, at least from what I'm able to tell, seems to be that YouTube is trying to get preferential terms that are below market. But the feeling I get at the same time is that ESPN, while this is all happening, has had other things occur that is causing the perception of this blackout from consumers, at least, to place the blame on ESPN more so than YouTube TV. YouTube TV is part of Alphabet Inc. That's a company with a $3 trillion market cap. Disney, I believe, is about $200 billion market cap. In the end, does YouTube TV need Disney? Because my short answer would be no, but I'll just say then, I think the larger issue comes down to how it affects the local distributors. I mean, we saw the CEO of Sinclair this week, Chris Ripley, call for government intervention in this situation.
Well, as far as Sinclair goes, this is a rare case where Sinclair actually has a legitimate, like, beef. I'm not 100% sure how it works where Disney basically controls all of the streaming rights to all ABC programming. I mean, if I'm a Sinclair-owned affiliate, and I have a local newscast, Disney has nothing to do with that. So that, to me, I think is a legitimate grievance. Obviously, the less government intervention, I think, the better. And I also don't think it would end up doing anything positive.
The situation, I'll just add, where you have the Fubo and Hulu Plus Live TV business merger being completed during a government shutdown. Plus, we're still in the first few months of rollout of ESPN Unlimited and the ESPN direct-to-consumer platform. When you have those two things going on, and at the same time, you see that ESPN Bet, that deal fell through with Penn Entertainment. It's done as of December 1st. When you have ESPN personalities suddenly promoting a solitaire app, even if it's not the intention to go get people to sign up for ESPN Direct to Consumer, to sign up for Fubo or Hulu Plus Live TV, now that you have ownership of Fubo's platform, when you try to do that, I just think the perception at this point isn't good. And no matter how many times you're going to say that's not the intent or it's going to be reported that's not the intent, sometimes people are going to choose what they want to believe and perception can become reality.
Well, as you said, the only company bigger than Disney is Google, right? I mean, not the only one, but I mean, certainly this is weird that Google is not getting more heat. I think Disney maybe was counting on the idea that Google would get more heat. I think that the perception of ESPN, I think Offal announcing it an article saying the perception of ESPN is at an all-time low. There is a certain amount of amnesia that people do have as a general rule. But people were writing about BSPN while Stuart Scott was still there. right? People were irritated about all the cross promotion on ESPN, and Bob Lee was still there. Charlie Steiner was still there, and Robin Roberts was still there. Now, maybe it's more negative now than ever, but you know, it's been quite a while, and people will go back and they'll say, I miss when ESPN had Chris Berman. Well, you hated Chris Berman. You ran Chris Berman out on the rails, right? With You're With Me leather and the do, right? Remember that? Or the footage of him on the Monday Night Countdown set that was leaked? They rode him out on the rails. They rode Joe Morgan out on the rails, right? A lot of folks then come back around and say, man, I miss those guys. And I've said it before and I'll say it again. Stuart Scott was someone who got a lot of heat, a lot, not just from people who had a problem with him being, you know, an outspoken, you know, black sportscaster, but just the same kind of heat that Chris Berman got. I'll put it this way. I don't take too seriously the perception problem. Perceptions are often maybe rethought after the fact. And I don't know that ESPN really inspires as much hate relative to the past now than at any point in its history.
And I'd like to think in the end that with consumers, cooler heads will prevail. I mean, all things being equal, ESPN does have the most sports rights. It has a very large portfolio of sports rights. It does a good job in presenting most of its game broadcasts and tries to serve the consumer. But right now, emotions are at a high with this blackout. And Armand, when you're saying that people are getting more used to Disney networks not being on YouTube TV, is that because that Disney content continues to be posted on YouTube's free platform? I mean, if you're in a dispute with YouTube, wouldn't you think you're just going to eliminate your presence there entirely until a new agreement's worked out?
Isn't that strange? I mean, it's like you can push YouTube, you can let Stephen A's ramblings about something on related to the Cowboys or the NFL, that's fine being on YouTube, but YouTube TV is off limits. That's weird. That's just strange to me as a consumer. And I completely agree with you, Derek. It's like, it's not all or nothing, apparently, you know? And it's like the fans, meanwhile, get caught in the middle of it. It's hard to root for two Goliaths. You want them both to get the slingshot nailed in their heads. So standing on the outside of this here and looking as a fan at this and one who has YouTube TV, the perception piece, okay, you can say whatever you want to say. I think some of that is driven by narratives that have already existed and have been pushed by people with certain agendas politically and otherwise. But I don't care. Work it out. I mean, you know, like, give me the sports that I want. And then at some point, you have to wonder, YouTube TV, when it was rolled out years ago, $35 a month, it's now more than twice that amount by a considerable margin. At what point does that price come down? I mean, I know they're doing a $20 credit, but depending on how long this thing lasts, at what point do we start to have other conversations about what that price point needs to be? Because all of those things come into effect if you are, in fact, thinking about the fans' best interest.
And by the way, what's an extended period of time for that $20 credit? We still don't know. It just really underscores what's going on, especially when you look at YouTube not acceding to Disney's request to put ABC back on the air for Election Day and saying it's going to cause consumer confusion. I don't think there's as much pressure from the Google side of things as there is on Disney. And not to mention that ratings were down this past week. You have to imagine that YouTube TV not having the Disney networks on its platform did impact viewership.
Well, to go back to a point you made, Armand, earlier, you know, where was that Queens-Winthrop game?
It's on YouTube.
So it's on YouTube. Not YouTube TV, just regular free YouTube. And the other thing too, you know, if you happen to be like me, you really hate watching ads during YouTube videos because, hey, I was watching YouTube in 2005. There weren't any ads then, right? But if you hate watching ads during YouTube videos, it's really not a problem with live sports because there's always ads anyway. So to me, that's like, there's no issue. It's totally free. And as we said, a lot of sports viewing is because it's on. People are uncomfortable with that reality. But a lot of sports viewing is, oh, there's a game on. Doesn't have to be a good game. You don't have to know who the players are. It's just competition. And the reality is that ESPN's biggest problem, I don't think, is perception. I don't think it's, oh, man, people hate Stephen A. Smith. You know, certainly I'm no fan of Stephen A. Smith. But I don't think that's a problem for ESPN. I think the problem for ESPN is, one, to their credit, they've put a lot of their best games on ABC. A lot of them. And most people don't have the ability to just watch their local ABC affiliate. But you know, you don't have to spend a few $100s on a Nintendo. You can buy a cheap one. And depending on where you are, in most cases, you should be able to access your ABC station. So really, the best games that ESPN has, the very highest quality games, are all available on ABC, certainly when it comes to college football. For no reason at all, there's no requirement that ABC carry the best SEC games. The only requirement is that they carry one SEC game a week. ESPN could easily be the one airing, you know, LSU. Well, maybe not LSU. Who are the good teams this year in the SEC?
Georgia, Bama.
Yeah, that could easily be on ESPN, right? As opposed to ABC. But because they have not done it that way, the ESPN slate is pretty bad. Have you noticed that the last couple of years, when was the last time ESPN had a really high quality college football game? I don't mean Missouri Vanderbilt. I know they've had good seasons. But I'm talking about before this SEC deal, the way it was set up was CBS would get one SEC game a week. So ESPN every week would have the second best SEC game. Now ESPN at best has the fourth best SEC game every week because the top three are going to ABC. So their college football slate is weaker, right? They don't have the best games. They don't have any Big Ten games anymore, right? So you go back 2-3 years, they get the second best SEC game, and they'd get maybe sometimes in some weeks the best Big Ten game, right? They don't have anything like that anymore. Their NFL lineup, every game pretty much is on ABC. I know ESPN's got some exclusives coming up. Pretty much every game's on ABC. And they have fewer NBA games now in the new media rights deal than they did. They have fewer college basketball games because obviously they've sublicensed so many of them to other companies. Half of the college football playoff, they've sublicensed away. They have made themselves less essential. And I think that that's not a small reason why things might be happening right now.
So in the end, Disney and YouTube TV both seem pretty resolute in their positions. Again, discussions are said to be ongoing, but the sides are reportedly not close right now on a deal. How do you predict this ending? What is the ultimate outcome?
It's a fair question. I don't have a prediction right now. I don't think anybody would have thought it would cover two college football weekends, but the circumstance with DirecTV was 2 weeks long. With Charter, it was 2 weeks long. You know, maybe YouTube TV is just like DirecTV or Charter. It seems unnecessary. You know, John Arand and Puck, he wrote that you don't usually see blackouts over financial issues. And so that's been a bit surprising as well, because I don't really think anyone thought this would go to this point, because YouTube TV struck deals with Fox and NBC to avoid any kind of circumstance like this. But, you know, YouTube TV also has blacked out Univision for what, more than a month? And Univision's not an insignificant network. And by the way, it's not Brendan Carr who weighed in on the Univision blackout. The actual main guy, the one who used to host The Apprentice, I'm not sure if you've heard of him, he said that he wanted Univision back on YouTube TV. And that still didn't happen. So to me, if that didn't get YouTube to budge on Univision, the idea that the government will come in and say, fix this now, and it'll happen. I mean, one, yeah, that happened with Fox. But realistically, we might be, it's kind of scary to say this a little bit because you just never know what'll happen. We might be overstating the level to which corporations are terrified of the government, because obviously corporations have, you know, the government says jump, corporations say how high. But usually that's in circumstances where they're doing something they wanted to do anyway. All these universities wanted to crack down on speech anyway. CBS wanted to get rid of Colbert anyway. ABC's probably been wanting to get rid of Kimmel anyway. All of these things are things they wanted to do anyway. Has the government gotten any of these corporations to do something yet that they didn't want to do? And in this situation, if YouTube says, no, we're not doing this, I don't necessarily see a circumstance where, you know, I mean, you can just look at the Univision situation. Univision is a major, major network with substantial audiences that, by the way, during this blackout on YouTube TV, carried a World Series game. Now, granted, it's a simulcast of one game, but still, the fact that there's no deal there makes me think, the fact that there's no deal there, even though the actual president said, I want a deal, tells me that if YouTube wants to dig in, nothing is going to prevent them from doing that. That's kind of how I see it. But who knows? I mean, it does also seem like an unnecessary conflict.
It's hard for me to say as well, because I really didn't think it was going this long. I just want to call some things out, because you always sort of think about what are the events that we've got to have, right? Because typically those events force the networks and the carriers to get together. And you would think the NFL would have been enough, right? If nothing else, the NFL is king. So you would have thought that would be the case. But you got the NFL playoffs coming up in January, because we don't know how long this will last. I'm just pointing out, college football playoff January, NFL playoffs January. I mean, just thinking about that. And then, of course, you've got the women's tournament, which will be on ESPN networks coming up in March. So I'm just thinking about those championship events, those gotta have it events, because you can get away with missing regular season games, but fans really want to see their championship games. That's really where the bread gets buttered. So if we get out to that point, then who knows with all of this? Because I really thought that the NFL season, the regular season, would have been enough. I mean, my goodness, we just saw Kansas City Buffalo get 31 million viewers. So you would have thought the NFL regular season would have been enough to get folks to come together. But to this point, it is not.
How often do we see a fight like this between two league partners? I mean, YouTube did air a game earlier this year, and there's been no secret that YouTube could increase its presence with NFL games down the road. And then, of course, ESPN trying to do this equity deal with the NFL. It's certainly a very interesting subplot to see how this plays out.
Well, if you want to be technical, I mean, Comcast obviously owns NBC, so you can go back to that. But certainly, it's a very interesting scenario and hard to see how it plays out. Obviously, that's a big story in sports media this week, but it's been a busy week in the industry, and we are coming off of the end of the World Series last weekend, Game 7, the Blue Jays and Dodgers, one of the greatest baseball games ever played, and an audience far exceeding anybody's wildest expectations. I know I was thinking that maybe 20 million might be the number we see, maybe, and I actually was on the record, 18, 19 million. My point of view was, it's a Saturday night, least watched night of the week. And even though the World Series had been doing well relative to expectations, it wasn't exactly, you know, blockbuster or anything. The first five games were reasonably solid, even good by post-COVID standards. But if you had gone back and put those same numbers in, say, 2017, they'd have been pretty bad. But that number for Game 7, that was good in any era of television. 27 million viewers on a Saturday night, least watched night of the week, most watched Saturday sporting event outside of the NFL and the Olympics since 1996. Armand, I mean, I know I wasn't expecting that kind of audience. What do you think played into that game doing so well?
It was a good stinking series. That's what it was. And the LA market obviously helps, but it was an amazing series. It was an incredible series. And it just goes to show you, I think back to one of my favorite and probably my favorite baseball game of my life, the 2016 Game 7 between Chicago and Cleveland. People like championship events. People like drama. People like when the stakes are high. People love that. Now, to be honest with you, I didn't want the game on a Saturday night. You and I have talked about this. We wanted the schedule to, you know, for baseball to not be so afraid of the NFL and take them on a Sunday night. Because to me, it's hard to not see that game getting 30 million on a Sunday night, even with Sunday night football. You agree with me?
Well, on a Sunday night, I don't think so because of the NFL. No. But on a Wednesday night, because that's the thing, right? It's not about making sure Game 7's on a Sunday. It's about making sure you're not so afraid of competing on Sunday. The only schedule that allows you to not have a Sunday game is the one that starts on Friday and ends on Saturday. So to me, Wednesday night Game 7, 28, 29, 30 million, all in play in my view. But, you know, maybe it's even better to get that kind of a number on a Saturday night. I mean, what else ever is going to get that kind of number on a Saturday night other than a Game 7 of the World Series? Who knows? But it would have done better on another night of the week. That's no doubt to me.
It was just great drama, man. I mean, I think sometimes people want to overanalyze and go here and go there. And you know what? Sometimes people just want great captivating television. And when you can lean into that, and when you can magnify that, and you have the opportunity to tell the stories and to cover just this natural drama, you don't have to overthink it. You've got a Toronto franchise looking for its first World Series in three decades. You've got the Dodgers, this giant with Ohtani and Freddie Freeman, and they're the big bad guys who keep winning. And like, I think there was so much meat on the bone there that even as an objective fan, you wanted to watch because you had people who were easy to root for. And I think all of those things play into it. Sometimes the sporting event is so good, so replete with drama that it compels you to want to watch.
Yeah, you know, we've seen all the comparisons to the NBA. And I said this on Dice's podcast. It's always an occasion to punch the NBA, right? It's always an occasion for NBA bashing. But I mean, the comp is fair. I've made comps between the World Series and NBA Finals on many occasions. It's a fair comp and a great comp for MLB because they've beaten the NBA now 4 out of 6 years. But when we're talking about the comparison between these two series, I enjoyed Pacers Thunder a great deal. Went to 3 of the games in person covering it for the site. And a great atmosphere in Indianapolis. But if I wasn't in person for 3, 4, and 6, I don't know how much that series would have kept my attention. Even though Game 1 was decided on a game winner, it was kind of a shocker, right? The game was not interesting until the very end. Game 2 and 5 were competitive. It was a nice series. But if you're looking for a baseball analog to that NBA Finals, it was, you know, Nationals Astros or something, right? This was a level of play. It was the best quality. One, last year's World Series was not played at this level, right? Between the Dodgers and Yankees. I mean, no World Series has been played at that level, including Cubs-Cleveland, which was a 3-1 series where if anyone could tell me a memory from the first 5 games of that series, I'd be surprised. I kind of remember Game 6, because by that point you're like, whoa, this could be something interesting. But first 5 games, who even cared? I mean, the ratings were great, but it was kind of a nothing series. You'd have to go back probably to 2000. I was going to say 2001, but that was just 3 games, 4, 5, and 7 in terms of quality. Arizona won one of those games 15-2. I don't know the last time the World Series was this good start to finish, where basically, I know Game 1 was a rout and 4 and 5 were not that competitive. But you have an 18-inning game in Game 3. You have Shohei Ohtani on the mound for Game 4 and 7, and two classics to finish it off. You make the point. People want to watch great play. And if you, no matter who the teams are, if you put two teams out there and you're saying convincingly, this is some of the best play we've ever seen, people will respond to that.
What are the odds that Miguel Rojas ties the game with 1 out in the 9th inning? Blue Jays are 2 outs away from winning the World Series. And everyone thought the guy on deck was going to tie the game. It was an outstanding series. The Blue Jays were just centimeters away from winning, and it averaged that 7th game 51 million across the U.S., Canada, Japan, and overall 34 million globally for the World Series across those 3 countries, most since 1991. If this World Series tells me one thing from a consumer perspective and also from a reporting perspective, it would be that baseball and its players had better figure out their labor negotiation issue before a potential lockout after next season, because baseball has palpable momentum. Baseball has young stars, and you would think that the sport wants to continue growing, but I think there is a lot of ambiguity and, quite honestly, some pessimism surrounding what 2027 and beyond could bring.
I don't think it's that important. I mean, I think if you look back at all these collective bargaining situations, I think we've overstated the impact. Now, if you lose a season, yes, that's devastating.
That's what I'm referring to. A potential year-long lockout should be more clear.
Well, that would be pretty crazy. I mean, I can't see that happening. I mean, you never know. Realistically, there's certainly enough incompetence, right, in the air to make that happen. But
we see with the WNBA.
Yeah, I mean, losing a whole year, that's definitely devastating. But if you have a shortened season, we just saw a shortened season in baseball of 60 games. So in the 60-game, in the post-60-game era, hey, 80 games, 90 games, whatever, it'll be fine. And we've seen all these leagues survive lockouts that shorten a season, and people, they lose their mind. They go, oh, I'll never watch again. And sometimes they really feel that way too. And sometimes they might leave for a little while, but they always come back. It's just the way it goes.
I was thinking about this was this the greatest World Series since 91? You had 5 1-run games in that 7-game series between the Braves and the Twins back in 91?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, obviously, I wasn't watching in 91. I wasn't watching in 01, honestly. But, I mean, look, just going back and looking at what baseball put out this year, there's not a lot of 7-game World Series. And remember, the 7-game World Series of the past decade were all the dog series, kind of like Pacers Thunder, right? For whatever reason, the dog series always tend to go 7 games for some reason. But Giants Royals, that was not a good series. Game 7 was okay. Obviously, Cubs Cleveland is a big exception here. And Astros Dodgers was also an exception. I mean, that was a really high quality World Series and probably on the same level as Blue Jays Dodgers in terms of drama. In fact, the first 5 games in 17 were way better than the first 5 games this time around. It's just that Game 7 was uninteresting, and obviously people believe that Houston cheated. So that takes some of the shine off of that as well. But maybe.
Astros Nationals went 7 games too, right?
It did, but it wasn't interesting. The road team won every game, but it wasn't an interesting series at all. It wasn't. Although I will say, do I believe more people were watching that Game 7 than this year's Game 7? Absolutely. Beyond the fact that the household rating was decently higher, a 13.1 compared to an 11.5 this year, 23 million viewers without out-of-home viewing or big data. No question that the 2019 Astros Nationals Game 7 had more viewers, all things being equal.
And maybe that also part of that is because 2 U.S. teams compared to 1 in this scenario. But still, Canadian viewership was phenomenal for this World Series. Rogers Sportsnet broke all kinds of records, it seems, and their coverage was really lauded too. I know Dan Shulman, Buck Martinez, and Hazel May really got a lot of compliments after that series.
Absolutely. And I will say, though, this series, the Toronto market not being there, yeah, that was a factor. But the Los Angeles market alone made this a bigger market World Series than in 2019 or 21 or 22 or 23. In fact, you have to go back to 2015 to find a bigger market World Series that the Dodgers did not play in. And that was the Royals, as you might remember, Derek, that was the Royals over the Mets.
You're bringing back memories.
Yeah, back in 2015. So it was not a small market series, even with the Toronto market not being there. LA alone makes a difference. And you look at, if you have 2 U.S. markets, but they're OKC and Indiana, that's a heck of a lot worse than having one, but one of them is Los Angeles, just to make that point. I would add just, it's worth wondering whether or not the fear of a Canadian team is overstated, because the Canadian team specter, I think, has hung over these title series because of NHL Stanley Cup finals from like 20 years ago that didn't do well. But Calgary, Tampa Bay, of course, wasn't going to do well, right? And Ottawa, Anaheim, of course, wasn't going to do well. Edmonton, Carolina, of course, wasn't going to do well. But if you've got Toronto, Los Angeles, or Toronto, Golden State, which did not do well the first 4 games, it did not. But if you look back at Toronto Golden State versus the subsequent NBA Finals, that series did pretty well. I think maybe it's time to kind of recognize if you've got a big market Canadian team with a lot of tradition, star players or whatever, and they're taking on a big market American team, that's not a bad circumstance. I'll circle back to something I've said in the past. If you gave me the choice between Edmonton, Toronto in the NHL and Florida, Dallas, I'm 1,000,000% taking Edmonton, Toronto in a heartbeat. If the choice is between 2 Canadian teams of some level of star power, tradition, and relative familiarity versus 2 Sunbelt teams, there's no question I'm taking the Canadian teams.
But there's a key difference there also. The Blue Jays represent the entire country of Canada. The NHL has 7 Canadian teams, so, and the Raptors have the same thing in the NBA where they are the only Canadian franchise. So I think that could play a role also. But no doubt about it, this Blue Jays team was likable. This Blue Jays team had a lot of great players, great personalities, and they really had a story behind them. It felt like one of those movies where the person you want to win just falls short at the end. And the journey was still really compelling, and the Blue Jays definitely have a chance to win this thing next year. They're a very talented group.
I just want to add from a broadcasting standpoint, this was producer Pete Macheska's final World Series. He's going to stay on to continue producing the NFL on Fox, but this was his final World Series. Of course, Fox's coverage of Major League Baseball since 96 has been very strong, and he's a key reason for that, along with late director Bill Webb, who passed away some years ago, and now their current director, Matt Gangle. So just want to give kudos to Pete on his final World Series, a heck of a way to go out as lead producer of the MLB on Fox. Davis is going to nail the big calls. He just is. And at this point, the Davis-Smoltz booth is what it's going to be. Some fans will love it. Some fans will endure it. But Davis is going to nail the big calls. Smoltz is going to be his great self when it comes to breaking down pitches. But every now and then, you're going to want him to just be a little bit more joyful. It's a booth that it's going to be what it's going to be. People said some of the same things about Buck and McCarver. At some point, you just get used to it. And until there's a change or something different, that's what you do. It's not a bad booth at all, but that's your lead booth. And so it kind of is what it is.
Well, how would you improve it? Who is the great baseball analyst? Because you look at ESPN, and they had Jessica Mendoza and Eduardo Perez. Now, hey, I have nothing against either of them, but I don't think they're, I mean, I like Eduardo Perez, you know. I don't think they're World Series quality analysts. I mean, I don't. I don't know if you agree or disagree, but.
I do agree.
Who's going to be better than Smoltz? What, go back to Verducci and Harold Reynolds, right? Yeah, it's tough. There's a reason why McCarver had that job for 40 straight years, basically.
He did.
And when McCarver didn't have it, Joe Morgan did.
Yeah, I don't think there is any one analyst that just blows you away right now. I mean, I like Darling and Francoeur over at TBS, but Francoeur is much younger, obviously, than Ron Darling. And Ron Darling is, I think he's in his 60s now, right? But yeah, I mean, at the NFL, you've got your up-and-coming folks. You've got Olsen. You've got Romo, I guess, to some degree, even though I have my thoughts on him. But there's just not that guy coming up in Major League Baseball that is ready to sort of take over the next spot. The only guy maybe is Adam Wainwright. Maybe Waino. I like his chemistry with Pierzynski and Adam Amin on that number two booth, but there's no one guy who just takes your breath away as a baseball analyst.
Well, don't forget Ben McDonald. Hockey fans can't forget him. Don't forget Ben McDonald.
No, they have not forgotten him. He is unforgettable in many ways.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this edition of the Sports Media Watch podcast. I want to thank Armand and thank Derek for joining me. And we will be back with some interviews coming up. We taped this podcast on Friday, and in relatively short order, we should have interviews out with Michael Grady, with Jared Greenberg, with Adam Lefkoe. And we have another interview that we're taping. Won't say who it's with, but someone from the original NFL Today on CBS in the 1970s. So a lot of good stuff coming on that front. We'll be back with more stuff down the line.